Want to pay that ransom? Well, you might end up paying a penalty too. Medical services are being targeted by criminals, and phishing is getting smarter. All that coming up now on ThreatWire. Greetings! I'm Shannon Morris, and this is ThreatWire for October 6th, 2020. This is your summary of the threats to our security, privacy, and internet freedom. Just some quick news. I have opened up a Teespring store for ThreatWire merchandise. Since I don't really have the capacity to manage a bunch of inventory and shipping myself, I am now offering ThreatWire merchandise like t-shirts, women's t-shirts, which I've wanted for forever, mugs, and more in my Teespring store. It's now open for orders, and I will add new merchandise in the near future as well. So let me know what kind of merchandise you would like that I can get through Teespring. The link is down below if you are interested. And now, on to the news. Shout out to patron Eugene of Yama Industrials Inc. for sharing this story with me.
The U.S. Department of Treasury posted an advisory on October 1st detailing potential penalties for paying a ransomware payment.
They specify that any payments made to certain entities or countries could end up putting the victim at risk of having to pay a penalty levied by the Office of Foreign Assets Control up to $20 million. Their reasoning is that ransomware has increased during the pandemic, and paying the ransom only encourages future ransomware demands, but it could also violate OFAC regulations. The penalty could be levied against any company that facilitates payment, like financial institutions, cyber insurance firms, digital forensics, or incident response firms, and the hacked company itself. Now, OFAC handles sanctions on individual persons, but also a sanctions nexus on certain countries. They have a list of designated nationals and blocked persons, along with a list of certain countries, including North Korea, Iran, Cuba, and several other countries and regions that U.S. persons are basically prohibited from doing business with. That includes directly or indirectly engaging in some kind of transaction that could enable criminals or adversaries to continue profiting and advancing illegal activities that can negatively affect national security or foreign policy objectives of the United States. Now, recently added includes several hacking groups like Evil Corp from Russia, Lazarus Group of North Korea, and specific cyber criminals. Since ransomware became a thing, the general consensus among cybersecurity professionals and law enforcement already has just been, do not pay the ransom, because it could encourage even more attacks. But many times, companies are stuck with paying the ransom as it's cheaper and it's faster than dealing with loss of data in downtime. The advisory also mentions that if appropriate actions are taken and attempts are made by the company to not pay that ransomware at the get-go, and that ends up being a last resort, they will take that into consideration if it turns out the attack was made from a sanctioned party. They also mention that in certain circumstances, a payment may be excused from paying a penalty, so it really comes down to a case-by-case basis. Unfortunately for victims, oftentimes there's no way to tell if an attacker is sanctioned before paying the ransom. The obvious answer to this would be for all companies to strengthen their systems ahead of time and be proactive, not reactive, to attacks, as well as have a mitigation plan in place in the event that an attack was successful. Unfortunately, though, many companies and organizations are just not able to do this, and they must consider ransomware just a cost of doing business. Multiple medical services were hit with large cyber attacks, taking down and disabling emergency services and hospital data last week. Universal Health Systems is a provider with over 400 locations in the U.S. They were hit with a cyber attack last weekend on September 27th, taking down their systems and forcing the locations offline. Hospitals had to file patient information on pen and paper, while their IT staff disconnected all systems and they shut down their networks to prevent further unauthorized access. Now, while UHS did not specifically explain what kind of attack this was or what information was targeted, some media outlets are reporting this to be a ransomware attack based on employee claims. During that downtime, UHS hospitals and clinics did have to turn some patients away, while emergencies had to be redirected to alternate hospitals. As of yesterday, the network has been restored and applications are being reconnected on a rolling basis. No patient or employee data was accessed during the attack. Another cyber attack hit another medical center in Ohio, the Ashtabula County Medical Center, and this appears to not be related to the UHS attack, though this too appeared to be a ransomware attack. On Tuesday, the medical center made a statement saying a cyber attack forced their systems offline and forced the clinic to postpone elective procedures. The emergency department in outpatient care continued as normal. Ashtabula reported that patient data was not compromised. And lastly, last week, 14 U.S. state police departments reported having 911 outages. This included Arizona, California, Colorado, Delaware, Florida, Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, Nevada, North Carolina, North Dakota, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Washington. Phone lines for 911, along with their SMS services, lost connectivity. While no jurisdiction reported that this incident was caused by a cyber attack, the timing is relevant, and this happened on the same day that UHS was hit. Now, some reports suspect that the 911 downtime could have been caused by an Office 365 infrastructure change by Microsoft that caused services like Office, Outlook, Teams, and such to have connection issues. But it could have also been caused by the telephone system provider, which is called PSAP, P-S-A-P, or Public Safety Answering Points. PSAP handles 911 calls for routing and interconnection before they are transmitted to the correct call center. One of PSAP's VoIP services appeared to have issues that could have caused the downtime as well, but no confirmation was reported. Now, given that ransomware is becoming so prevalent, especially this year, these three reports, while not related, are connected in showing how vulnerable our medical infrastructure can be. Before we hit story number three, you know the deal. I wanted to say thank you so much to my supporters at patreon.com/threatwire. Check out these new fur babies that we got from my Hush Puppy perk level patrons. They're so awesome for sending them in and very, very cute. I love them. Keep them coming. Also, a new perk has been added. If you didn't hear about it last week, I'll let you know again. Patrons now get access to discount codes for the Hack 5 shop. That means Wi-Fi pineapples, USB rubber duckies, all sorts of devices. Check out this month's discount code over on the Patreon page, and every few months a new code will be generated and may include different discounts or freebies. So keep an eye on the page for updates, and I wanted to thank the Hack 5 shop for helping me make that happen. As always, you can find all the perks, including that one, over on the Patreon page. Thank you so much to my patrons. I appreciate each and every one of you. This story was chosen by my ThreatWire patrons. Thank you, patrons. A new phishing attack is being called a game changer by security professionals due to its methodology for spreading. This phishing attack was fully outlined by Craig Hayes, who is a bug bounty hunter and a security architect, who explained how the attack goes beyond the normal tactics so often seen. Hayes reported that a response team received usual phishing alerts when a solo account was targeted, locking it down and beginning their routine investigation. That same day, the team got multiple other reports for phishing, usually normal, but eventually realized this was a large amount of account takeovers. According to the post, accounts were accessed from multiple locations all over the world, and they were sending out huge amounts of emails. Now, this could either be a really effective phishing attack, or someone was quietly biding their time after stealing some credentials. If that second hypothesis was correct, that meant that the initial credential theft was not reported or flagged, so the team turned on sign-in timestamps to find the attack vector, which it turned out were phishing attempts that were sent as replies to legitimate emails between legitimate colleagues and sources. They studied this traffic and they concluded that one account got compromised and the credentials were then sent over to a bot that would read through recent emails to find a way to slip into the conversation. The bot would reply with generic wording and a link to a document using reply all. Now, this resulted in several accounts being compromised within just a few hours, which created the phishing alerts that they had received. The bot attack grew exponentially even outside the target company, since legit emails email account holders would usually email not only their own colleagues, but also people that they did business with, then those businesses would also be hit. The response team was able to mitigate the issue by making a quarantine rule based on a pattern in the URL used for the phishing pages. So, the moral of the story. Well, Hayes says the attack was too effective, it was too loud, and as such, it triggered alerts. Also, multi-factor authentication should be enabled by default for companies and individuals, and MFA was eventually enabled for the accounts that this attack did not have it turned on. Now, humans inherently trust colleagues and partners who send emails to them, so this is a major potential for attacks. Before I leave, I want to say thank you so much to John A., Matthew S., Marhar Tech, Jeremy, Tony R., JB, and Alex, who joined the team this week on Patreon. Thank you so much to each and every one of you. You are awesome. And with that, do not forget to like and subscribe. I'm Shannon Morse, and I will see you on the internet.